to Canadian Politics is Boring.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Canadian Politics is Boring. I am Rhys Waters, and with me is the impenetrable Jesse Harley.
Impenetrable! Nothing can penetrate this exterior of...
like a 1960s-era bunker.
Yep, that's how a lot of women describe me.
Yeah, covered in moss and leaky.
Yeah, no, I can't tell you how many times I've been told that's... Yeah. Jesse, do you mean the guy who's covered in moss and is leaky? Yeah, right? Okay, yeah, that's...
Yeah. That's you on your dating profile online.
I've had so much coffee. Oh, my God.
So I'm really excited to do this episode. This is a really cool story.
Okay. Are we just diving right in? No small talk?
Do you want to do small talk? I don't know. Have you got anything small happened that you'd like to talk about?
I got my vaccine.
Did you?
I did.
No, that wow. Was,
yeah. It was fun. Not really.
How did it feel?
Actually, it was painful. It was a needle in the arm, but like, you know, I'm glad I got it done.
Oh, thank God. It does go in the arm. That's good.
I'm sure you could ask for it anywhere.
Don't believe what you read online.
Like, Rhys, if you wanted to like, you know, hike up your shorts and get a jab.
I don't want to hike up my shorts. Trust me, I've been there.
You can get jabbed anywhere you want. I'm sure they'll probably oblige. But
okay, what about in between my eyes on my forehead?
Oh, sweet God! Okay, this is too in between.
Oh, please, sir. We do insist on the arm. I'm gonna ask him if I can live stream it when it happens.
Can we start this again? Because we're gonna gross out so many people talking about needles in between your eyes.
No, this is all going in. Anyway,
are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. People get really freaked out about that shit.
I don't. I'm fine. You can shove anything in my arm.
It's oh my
fine.
God, stop. No, this is not okay.
I can't. Nutella. Oh, I got a question for you. How come?
Oh my God, okay.
Nutella, the chocolate spread. How do you say Nutella?
Nutella.
Why do people say Nutella? I've heard people say Nutella.
Because they're wrong.
I thought it was a Canadian thing where people call it Nutella, despite the fact it's made of nuts and the word nut is in the name. I don't know why you would not pronounce Nutella. I don't know why you go Nutella.
You don't.
Why would you soften the nut?
Okay, that's fine.
This is great small talk.
This is fantastic small talk. It's been...
Okay, should we move on to
really,
the content?
You know, it's really funny. We just came off of recording some ads for a sponsor, and we had to really kind of watch what we said. And I feel like now Rhys has bottled up all this kind of...
Inappropriate
shit, and he just wants to like throw it all. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Just get it all out, man. Just
feels good. Anyway. Do you want to talk about my cool story? It's not my cool story. It's a cool story I found that I would like to share.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes.
It's called the Cold War Hockey Battle.
The what?
Cold War Hockey Battle. Do you know the Cold War? Do you know what the Cold War was?
Yeah.
Good. And you know what hockey is?
Yeah.
Have you heard of the Summit Series?
No. You love that I don't know shit, do you?
This I do. Just I like, you're like, yes, I'm a knowledge god. So I'm not. I have the internet. So it was an 8-game hockey series between the Soviet Union and Canada held in September 1972. Well, it was kind of through the summer of 1972.
With the same teams?
The same teams playing each other 8 times, 4 games in Canada, 4 games in the Soviet Union.
And did they tie like 7 freaking times or something?
No. It was just set out to be 8 games. The idea was they tore around the both countries playing, and it was supposed to be like a proof of like who was the best at hockey, but also it was kind of like a mixture of propaganda and kind of like friendship as well, in terms of like a friendly sports contest between
friendship
two.
And propaganda.
Friendship and propaganda. Well,
the
whoever
two
would
pillars
win.
Of hockey. Yeah, that's...
exactly. Friendship, propaganda, and sponsorships. It was the first competition between the Soviet national team and a Canadian team that was made up of players from the NHL, and they called themselves Team Canada. And the idea was that the first four games would be held in Canada, and the final four would all be held in Moscow. And they were kind of there was definite sense of nationalism. So it was a lot of national pride for the Canadians to want to beat the Soviet Union, and also for the Soviet Union to show how dominant their and superior their system was, and their sports,
their
and
system.
Their system their ideology. But there's a thing. Have you ever communism?
Are they still communist?
No, they weren't. This is in the 70s, Jesse, back when they still were.
Right. Okay, that's what I was asking. They're not still.
Yeah.
Okay,
no, so they were. They were trying to prove back then, historically in the past, that they had a better system. But what they didn't
through
know
was playing hockey.
Through playing hockey. Just to go,
How are you? Okay, hold on.
Imagine if you were given the opportunity to try and humiliate the world's number one hockey playing nation of Canada.
Through
Soviet Union.
Communism.
No, through hockey.
Where does communism tie into this?
Well, that's the whole thing, is propaganda, isn't it? They try and prove that they're living in a utopia with this new system.
Getting a phone call.
You're getting a phone call. Who is it? Is it communism?
It's my buddy Howie. Hi, Howie. Not right now, bud. Sorry. I thought that might have been my food coming.
Did you order food while we record an episode?
Maybe. I'm hungry. Okay. I want some.
Yeah, well, anyway, are you hungry because you're not even paying attention to this wonderful story.
I just don't understand how communism and hockey tie together.
It doesn't. It's them going. It's two. You had two sides, capitalism and communism, both trying to prove that the other was superior over the other, and that their whole system of how they ran their country was better than the other. So if they could beat them at hockey, it was another little getting one over.
I'm not a sports guy, just so you know.
I was just talking about communism and capitalism. What part of that do you think is sports?
I don't know. Apparently they're tied together somehow.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, look at the Olympics. Look at Jesse Owens winning and humiliating Hitler at the Berlin Olympics. You know, he was an African-American who beat all of the supposedly superior Nazi.
I didn't know that happened, but that's neat.
Yeah, so that's how sport and politics can tie together. He basically shoved two fingers up Hitler's nose when he won his gold medal. He
chose those
metaphorically.
Metaphorically, you can show that.
So there was a Canadian diplomat called Gary Smith who was responsible for sport and cultural exchanges between Canada and the Soviet Union. And they knew that the Soviets were looking for like a new ice hockey opportunity. So he basically met with the Soviet hockey boss, Andrea Statovoitov. Again, this is me. Instead of butchering French, we're going to butcher Russian this episode.
Say it again. I want to hear you butcher Russian as badly as possible.
Andrei Starovotivov. Starovotivov?
Yep. I'm going to say that's correct.
It is. It's bang on. Anyway, so they basically said they wanted to play a series with this national team against like the best Canadian players. So the top Canadian players from the NHL. They didn't want to play anybody less than Canada's finest. So the Canadian ambassador, Robert Ford, passed the information on to Ottawa, and they basically started to negotiate and nail down terms for the
ambassador for Canada's name was Rob Ford?
Robert Ford, yeah.
Really? How many Fords are we getting in the government in this country?
That one.
No, I know, but still, it's like a... All right, that's just a weird coincidence. Please continue.
Yeah, it was... this Robert Ford received his BA in History and English in 1937 from the University of Western Ontario and an MA in History from Cornell University in 1940.
So quite clearly a dramatically different Rob Ford already.
He was the ambassador to Colombia, Yugoslavia, United Arab Republic, and the USSR. So, you know, he did a lot of ambassadoring.
That's a word.
I think that's the word. So they selected a coach called Harry Sindel, and his job was to select Team Canada, and it was composed of the NHL All-Stars. And the Soviets named 31 players, and they were all basically Olympic athletes who'd played hockey for the Soviet Union. And they were kind of a veteran team. So the Soviet team, they were very few kind of like inexperienced players. They were all kind of made up of very hardened Olympians who'd played lots of different competitions around the world. So it was... It was serious. They were gearing up. There was a lot of emotion tied into this. Everyone had something to prove, really.
Okay.
One of the things about the Soviet Union at this time was that they, obviously the NHL, they had very modern techniques to train players at the time. But the Soviet Union was kind of training players in isolation. So Bobrov, who was the Soviet coach, decided to give the Soviet players boxing lessons as part of the training.
What? Why?
Because they were just training differently. They were kind of, they weren't aware of the modern or the typical North American ice hockey training. So they were just making it up and doing their own thing.
Or did they, were they aware of how much Canadian hockey players like have fist fights on the ice? And like, oh, well,
I don't know. Well, they have boxing lessons ready for, maybe they watched.
I think that's probably exactly what they watched Canadian hockey. They're like, oh shit, that's part of the sport. They like every 10 minutes, someone gets into a fist fight. Exactly. Well, we're not going to let our guys lose a fist fight on the ice.
Exactly.
To boxing lessons for hockey.
It's very, very reasonable that was the case. So they arrived in Montreal on August the 30th, and they stayed in the Queen Elizabeth Hotel, and they began two-a-day workouts. And they'd been already, they kind of acclimatized themselves to the time zone difference. So they were training on Montreal time 2 weeks before arriving. So basically, they were just living in a different time zone while still in Moscow. So they were
just
ready.
Just a shit ton of jet lag, basically.
Yeah. And going into this, everybody assumed Canada would win this very easily.
They didn't. Okay.
No, they did. They assumed Canada would win easily. So like now, a lot of the top players in the NHL are Canadians, even though a lot of the American teams, hugely overrepresented with Canadian players.
Interesting.
And the National Hockey League was, you know, at the time was considered to be the best, where the best hockey players in the world played, and the best players were largely Canadians at the time too, and kind of still are. It's obviously a decades-long tradition. And the public kind of opinion of all the sports pundits and fans in North America and other countries was that the Soviets would be no match for the best of Canada's kind of players. Even the Soviets kind of downplayed their chances slightly. They were kind of being coy about it. And the Team Canada coach, Harry Sindel, basically said, Canada is first in the world for two things, hockey and wheat.
Wheat?
Wheat, yeah. Canada makes a lot of wheat.
I was going to say poutine, but sure. Yeah, wheat. We'll go with
so
that.
Can you guess what happened next?
I'm guessing Canada beat Russia.
No.
So no.
At the Montreal Forum on September the 2nd, in front of 18,000 fans, the Soviets beat Canada 7-3.
Fuck off.
And the coach, Sindel, the Canadian coach, said he was basically stunned. I was stunned by their performance. So apparently, the former Montreal Canadiens coach Claude Ruel said that the Soviets forwards were one of the most finely honed units he'd ever seen. They were always moving, never standing around. They head manned the puck as well as anybody ever has, and they always seemed to be in the right place. So basically, they blew everyone away. Whatever the training techniques they come up with, they were just incredibly impressive and just completely surprised everyone.
That's insane. I bet it's the boxing, right? Because when they got into fights,
well, it wasn't just fighting.
The Canadians are probably just like flailing around as they do, and these Russians are now have like trained boxing, just like crack everyone. So everyone's like, all the Canadians are skating around with mild concussions.
Exactly.
My McDonald's.
Did your food arrive?
Yeah, I'm gonna go get it.
Oh my God.
You can just sit here with your own thoughts.
Sorry, listeners. Well, anyway, I'm having a great time so far. I mean, who expected that? Who expected the Soviet Union to beat Canada? But apparently as well, Team Canada accidentally snubbed the Soviets by returning to the dressing room without shaking hands with them after the game. And in the USSR, the team was celebrated into the early hours, and lots of people in the USSR had to take work off the next day because I imagine they consumed huge amounts of vodka and other beverages to celebrate. I think this sounds like Jesse just fell over and landed on his fast food, hopefully, and is all over his chest and in his face.
All right, there.
Yeah. Did you get your McDonald's?
Yes, I did, and I wish I were making this up, but I ordered some cookies and a milkshake as well as some other food, and I got a handwritten note saying ice cream or milkshake machine not working and no cookies, with a bag full of cash. Not full of cash, but a bag of cash. Just a bag of cash.
They just give you money back.
They just give me my money back in cash in a bag. So I'm like, nice. Oh, that's not how this usually works, but okay. You know what this hockey episode reminds me of, Reese?
Adverts.
Yep, advertisements. It's the middle of the episode. Time for an ad. Yay.
Do you want to learn in more about this wonderful event in history that involves sport and politics in a seamless blend of storytelling?
I can't tell you how much you already know how much I don't like politics. I like sports just about as much. So this is just an enthralling episode for me.
This isn't about politics or sports.
This isn't about you, Jesse.
Yeah, and it's not about you. This is two alternative ideologies and ways of existing battling on the ice.
I still don't understand how.
Well, anyway.
And hockey and communism.
The second game was played at the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto.
Just ignore Jesse. Yeah. Just ignore everything he's saying. Just keep going.
So the second game, Canada won. So that's 1-2 the Soviet Union, 1-1.
What was the score?
4-1 to Canada. So the Soviet coaches blamed the loss on the referees. They said the American referees, Frank Larson and Steve Dowling, let the Canadians get away with everything. And the head of the USSR Hockey Federation basically charged the door of the officials' dressing room and kicked chairs over in protest. Jesus.
So this is supposed to be a series of friendly games.
Yeah, but is the pressure on them from the expectations of two different countries are on these people to win and prove that they're the best at this sport.
So like they were getting angry letters from the king of communism.
Well, yeah, and this is it.
Is that what they had? Was it a king?
Well, not the king of communism. Yeah, no? Doctor communism. Doctor professor
communism. Yeah,
Lord.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Game three was played in the Winnipeg Arena on September the 6th and ended up in a 4-4 tie right at the end.
Oh, okay.
So
that must have really pleased Dr. Professor Lord King
exactly.
Communism.
Well, so now it was, they both won a game and now they'd drawn. And then game four was played in Vancouver at the Pacific Coliseum and the USSR beat Canada 5-3. So Canada had only won one game and drew one game, so they weren't doing very well. And they were actually booed off the ice, Team Canada, by the Canadians. And I'm going to play you an audio clip. So this is an interview with Phil Esposito, who's an NHL hockey pro who was on Team Canada, and he's being interviewed on the ice while people are booing at them and the rest. This is in Vancouver in the Coliseum. Yeah, I'm going to play this to you. It's from a documentary, so there's music and voiceover, and also Phil's voice comes in too.
As a team of outcasts head to their dressing room, one player remains on the ice. Phil Esposito is given the microphone to address a wounded nation.
For the people across Canada, we tried. We did our best. And for the people that boo us, geez, all of us guys are really disheartened and we're disillusioned and we're disappointed in some of the people. We cannot believe the bad press we've got, the booing we've gotten in our own buildings. And if the Russians boo their players, Russians boo their players, like some of the Canadian fans, I'm not saying all of them, some of them booed us, then I'll come back and I'll apologize to each one of the Canadians, but I don't think they will. I'm really disappointed. I am completely disappointed. I cannot believe it. Some of our guys are really, really down in the dumps. We know, we're trying. What the hell? I mean, we're doing the best we can, and they got a good team, and let's face facts. But it doesn't mean that we're not giving it our 150%, because we certainly are.
I think, Phil, the disappointment is a natural thing, because the whole thing was an unexpected thing. They, you know, we all live with the National Hockey League. We have all been so proud over the years how great they are.
It's unexpected because of the press said that we are so good.
No, no, no. This is the thing. This is the thing that I'm on behalf of the fans. I must say that probably since everything is relative, we know how good you people are. The people didn't realize how good the Soviet team was, and now we found out how good they are. I think we can appreciate how good both teams are.
But I'll tell you, we love, I mean, every one of us guys, 35 guys that came out and played for Team Canada, we did it because we love our country and not for any other reason, no other reason. They can throw the money for the pension fund out the window. They can throw anything they want out the window. We came because we love Canada. And even though we play in the United States and we earn money in the United States, Canada is still our home, and that's the only reason we come. And I don't think it's fair that we should be booed.
As I was doing that, people were yelling and screaming at us, calling me names, communism is better, don't you admit it now, and all this other stuff. This is Vancouver. And guys out of the stands were yelling that communism is best and it's supreme. That's when I really realized, man, we are in a war here. This is no game. This is war.
It's pretty serious. Yeah, but that's like, you get, like, I wanted to play that clip because I thought it was like, it's a lot of emotion going on, a lot of drama.
So, okay, yes, I can understand why he wouldn't like his own country booing them. That makes a lot of sense. The funny thing to me is the music they put in the background of this documentary clip. It just made it sound like it was like a World War II like biop of
that's what you do in a documentary. You put music underneath to tell people how they need to feel.
Right, of course. Otherwise, how would they know?
Exactly. Yeah. How would you know how to experience emotions without a bed of music? I think that I love that clip because he's obviously impassioned, and for people to be shouting communism is better based on a hockey match kind of gives you an insight into the emotion of the time and how important this game was to everyone involved.
Yeah, no.
Don't you get that from that, Jesse?
Well, the music told me, so yes.
Yeah, didn't the music tell you that, Jesse? So after the fourth game, there was a 2-week break, and then Canada had to go to Russia, to the Soviet Union, to Moscow, to play the last four games and try and recover to win the series. So they weren't even on home turf anymore. They had to go and win in Russia to claim to win this summit.
All right.
So, I mean, that's a hell of a challenge. To not win at home is hard.
Yeah.
So
the Russians were doing pretty well.
they were going home and they were already in the lead.
Yeah.
So the Canadians took a few days off. They traveled to Sweden and they played a few exhibition games in Sweden, and then they arrived in Moscow. They also brought 3,000 Canadian fans with them.
Holy shit.
To come and watch the games, just to have a little bit of support. Some of the team, Vic Hadfield, Rick Martin, and Jocelyn Giravon, left the team and went home because they felt they hadn't had much playing time and they were a little bit worried about taking part. Team Canada basically found out that the Soviet ice rinks and hockey kind of rinks were very different. So the ice was wider. And they had fish nets draped around the edges of the rink above the boards. And because it was strung up tight, you could actually hit the puck to bounce off the nets and catapult it back off the nets onto the ice, which is something you've never done before. So that was considered fine.
What about checking, though? Checking an opponent into the boards is like...
Well, there were boards and then there were nets above. So people were able to like ricochet off the nets. So basically
there were still boards. Okay. It wasn't just a giant net.
So basically they just found out that they were fishing nets as well. So they'd found out that the stadiums they were playing in were going to be different. So the first game five, was held on September the 2nd, and the Communist Party General Secretary, the Lord of Communism, Leonid Brezhnev, was there. There was a large contingent of military people in dress uniform. And the USSR won again, 5-4.
Wow.
But despite the loss, obviously this is in a film, this would be the third act crisis.
Right, of course.
All is lost. So despite that, the fans in the arena sang "Oh Canada" as the team left the ice. And cheering wasn't a thing in the Soviet Union. People didn't cheer in ice hockey. And the Soviet newspaper Pravda wrote that the roof of the arena had stood the loudness of the cheering and had remained in place. They were so kind of stirred, and it became a moment of people singing "Oh Canada."
Russians were singing "Oh Canada" to the losing team.
The Canadian fans were singing "Oh Canada," but they sang it so loudly that in a Soviet newspaper they wrote about the fact that they'd created a lot of noise and the roof had managed to stay on. And that did something, that moment.
Yeah.
So Canada won 3-2 the next game. And they found out that they complained then that despite winning, the German referees had been, they made some controversial
decisions. The what referees?
The German referees.
Okay.
Officiating the game. And they complained that they'd not followed the rules and been a bit biased. So,
kind of like the American referees for the Canadian games.
Well, the referees are called Joseph Kompala and Franz Bader, and the Canadians gave the referees the nickname Bader and Worse for the for the, which I thought was quite funny.
That's funny.
So then they were swapped with a Czech and a Swede referee instead to kind
like
of
the start of a joke.
It does. Yeah. So heading into the So Team Canada won game 7 again by 4-3. So there were 3 wins on both sides and 1 draw. So this 8th game, won the 8th game would basically win the series.
Oh my God.
So this is where you want that rousing music again to let you know how to feel.
Right. What would that sound like? That's just Terminator 2.
Yeah, yeah. Like Terminator 2. Imagine that. Just imagine Terminator 2.
I can't believe I got that from your wonderful singing.
So in Canada, much of the country was enjoying an official half-day holiday. Students in Toronto were sent home early, and a lot of people were sent home from work. And the game began 1 p.m. Eastern time.
Wow.
In Montreal's Central Station, 5,000 fans gathered around 10 TV sets to watch the game. This was the 70s, so TVs weren't very big. Right. So and it was simulcast in English on CBC and CTV and in French on Radio Canada. And it was the most watched sporting event in the history of Canadian television, which was trumped by the 2010 Winter Olympics, finally. So it held that record for like 40 years, nearly.
That's amazing.
And the game almost tied 5-5. And if they had tied, the Soviets would have won because of the goal differential. They'd scored more points. So Canada had to win and win convincingly. Oh,
because of the what, sorry?
Because they'd basically scored more goals. So they had...
If they scored more goals, how was it tied?
No, over the rest of the games.
Over all the games. Okay,
sport,
I gotcha.
Is hard. basically, in the last minute, there was with only 34 seconds to play, the final goal was scored. The scene was captured by Frank Lennon, the cameraman, and the image has become really iconic. So Team Canada won in the last 34 seconds, basically dictated the end of that whole drama. They left it right to the end moment. So Team Canada arrived back in Canada on October the 1st, and the team was mobbed by an estimated crowd of 10,000 people at Montreal's Dorval Airport. And they were met by Pierre Trudeau of Fuddle Duddle fame.
Yes.
And also the City of Montreal Mayor, Jean Draper, who we featured in the episode about the Olympic Stadium.
Oh, right. It's a good thing that they won, because it sounds like they wouldn't be allowed back in the country otherwise.
But also, the Soviets earned the respect of so many people. And what happened was then a lot of Soviet players then started playing for the NHL because of this. It gave them a demonstration of the level they could play at.
Yeah, it was a hell of an addition.
yeah. They were basically so impressed by the training methods and the kind of conditioning and how hard they pushed themselves to learn new sports. They said that it was Frank Malevich basically said, if you gave the Russians a football, they'd win the Super Bowl in 2 years. So basically saying they could take any sport, but they trained so hard, they'd be really good at it. And then the Philadelphia Flyers, the coach there, Fred Shiro, basically started copying the Soviet style of training and applying it to the NHL. And
just basically like boxing lessons?
No, well, he kind of studied how they were training. And by teaching the Philadelphia Flyers those training techniques, they won 2 Stanley Cup championships in 74 and 75 by basically going, well, let's just train like they do. And it worked.
How do they train?
I don't know. You can go and find out for yourself, Jesse.
I don't do that. That's what I got you for.
And he's also seen as one of Canada's biggest and most important cultural wins in the Cold War, to prove to Canada that they were still the number one hockey country in the world. And they had to dig really deep.
I mean,
and
barely. It was really close, man.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what a story.
That's actually really amazing.
I don't know why
they
haven't made a film with Ryan Reynolds and other Canadians, Seth Rogen, all those people. They could
Mike Myers, Seth Rogen, and
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
Kind of a real ensemble of cast of Canadian stars play in that team. And
I'd watch the hell out of that movie, just saying.
It would be a good movie. I'm just saying, if you're from Hollywood, right, and you've got some money.
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis, yeah.
Yeah. This is good.
Exactly.
Other Canadian actor idols. Yeah.
I'm just saying, it would be a great film. I'd watch that film. It'd be a good film. Let's make that film, but let's do it in stop motion animation.
Yeah, that's like that's a lot easier, honestly. Stop.
Wallace and Gromit meets Rocky. cool. So did you enjoy that story?
I did, and I don't enjoy politics nor sports, so this is quite a win for you, Reese, I gotta say.
A very big win. I'm very proud of myself right now. So I made you like two things you don't like now, Jesse.
Next is Brussels sprouts and scallops. Oh, God.
I don't know if I can find a good story about that, but I could just force feed you to
leave. No, please. No, I'm good. Thank you.
It's fine. So, call to action is, I don't know, go to Instagram page. Keep going to the Instagram page.
We're doing the Instagram page again?
Yeah, I'm going to, do you know what I'm going to do?
We're doing the Instagram to death, unless we're going to describe some new posts for our listeners.
No.
That seems to work last time.
If you follow us on Instagram, we do random live streams. We don't tell you they're happening.
Yeah, that's right. We do too.
Basically, I want you to feel so worried that you're going to miss out on our impromptu live streams that you can't sleep or eat.
What happens is Reese will text me like, hey, let's do a quick live stream. And then he'll go up and I'm like, oh God, okay, I'm just in my boxers. So I have to get dressed quickly in 60 seconds. And then he goes live and I'm invited. And then I'm just starting to talk. And he's like, okay, that's it. Thanks. Bye-bye. And it's been 60 seconds and we're out. And he thinks this is hilarious for some reason.
It's really funny because
people are scrambling to say hi as soon quickly as possible.
As soon as people start having a meaningful conversation, we leave. We're just trying to do our own thing. We're just trying to cut our own path in the world of live streaming. So you won't get a 3-hour live stream of us. All you get is 60 seconds and then we're gone.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, have a good week, everyone, and we'll see you very soon.
Thanks so much for sticking us in your ear holes just the way you like it. I'll snug up in there.
And, bye.
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 So fun. Bye.